Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am AJ Murray at No Blinky Blinky, and tonight I am joined by Tim Bertino. He is at Tim Bertino on Twitter. Tim, how you doing? Good to see you again.
I am fantastic, AJ. I passed the Security Plus this week.
Oh, that's right. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I just, it's always a big lift off my shoulders because I put a lot into it because I'm a terrible test taker. So I feel like I really need to. Now I know we've talked about, you know, the importance of failure plaques and that kind of thing. And it's okay to fail because you learn from it. But I like to go through these certification, practice training, whatever you want to call it, with the goal of not just passing the test, but wanting to make sure I understand the material that goes into the training and everything. So I'm a low and slow kind of guy when it comes to, cooking up these training excursions, if you will. So I usually prepare for quite a long time. So when I go into an exam, I want to feel like I can come away with a pass and not that I'm necessarily just kind of trying to gauge where I'm at. It's just not that there's anything wrong with that other approach, but that's just the way I take it. So, I spent like 6 months prepping for it. So, and I was super nervous too, cause I was like taking practice tests and all that kind of thing. And they were not like coming out very well. So I'm like, well, when I purchased the training, I did an exam voucher and a retake with it. So I'm like, I really want to get it done before the 4th of July holiday, cause it's about the time we're recording this. Yeah. And, if it doesn't come out well, then at least I got a retake voucher. So, but luckily came out on top and I can enjoy the holiday. So
there you go.
What's going on with you?
Well, congratulations, Tim.
Thank you.
I held my very first and attended my very first USNUA meeting. So the USNUA is the US Network User Association. And after hearing Jason Gintern's episode that we had here a few months ago, I got a little bit more curious about the USNUA, and I decided to become a leader and form a local NUG, network user group. So I found another network engineer in the area that I was, you know, friends with, and I was like, hey, there's this thing, we could start it. What do you think? And he jumped on board. So we held our first NUG meeting last week at a local brewery. And we had like 30 people show up. And Jason, the one of the founders of the USNUA, he flew up from Ohio and spent some time in Vermont with his wife, but he came up and kicked off our inaugural event. And he said, he's just like, you guys are killing it. This is the largest attendance we've ever seen at an inaugural meeting. So that this is a fantastic start to things up here in Vermont. So I'm pretty excited about that. Met some new network engineers in the area, and you know, not everybody's a network engineer, of course. They have like networking in their title with what they do. So it was just nice to make some new connections and quite frankly do some in-person events after not doing in-person events for quite a while. So it was an awful lot of fun.
But I'm going to have to have a conversation with you about that, and maybe Jason as well, because my state does not have one, and it seems like they've really got their stuff together as far as is empowering the people who are trying to start these and give them a lot of help and make it so they're not on their own. So yeah, I'm probably going to have a conversation with you about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that coming from like the leader side of it, you know, myself and my co-lead, all we had to do was jump on a couple of half-hour meetings, like at biweekly. We met with the team at the USNUA. They gave us a lot of pointers, a lot of good information, and a ton of support along the way. We provided to them a number of venues in the area that we felt would be good to host an event like this. And they did all the work. They called the venues, they got the pricing, they did the negotiations, they handled the contracts, and they paid for everything. You know, the busiest, the most time consuming part of it, of course, was the day of the event. They shipped me a box of t-shirts so I could hand out some free shirts and stickers for everybody. And then, you know, there was a lot of other like smaller items, right? Like sign-in sheets and some other little details and stuff like that. But leading up to it and planning it, it couldn't have been easier. The USNUA handled it all. So, you know, I will absolutely encourage you if you're thinking about starting a Nebraska NUG, definitely. And I can introduce you or connect you with the USNUA team there. And then anybody who's listening, like, find an event, find a local event, get out there, check it out. They're fun. It's what I really like about these events is that they have sponsors and it's no sales pressure, right? Like they don't even let the sponsors do the sales pitch. It's just come out, talk tech. You know, you might have a panel and a couple of speakers talking about hot topics and networking, but there's no sales pitch. There's no pressure from salespeople. There's just, you know, nerding out and maybe some drinks and some food. It's a good time.
Can you give a quick briefing on the topics that were covered in the inaugural Vermont event?
Phil Gervasi drove up and he attended the NUG and he gave a great talk on, you know, telemetry and just some real good thought leadership in the area of what's going on there. And then we had a few panelists, Charlie O'Riordan from our Discord. He's in New Hampshire and his company sponsored part of the event. And then he was on the panel as well. We had some other folks on the panel and we just talked about topics like what do you think the impact of 400 gig is going to have on what we do? And some other stuff like that. So it was really, really good. Good stuff.
Yeah, super exciting. Cool.
Well, Tim, your win on taking a certification exam and passing is really good timing for tonight's topic. I am very excited to welcome to the show this evening Brent Morris. He is the Cisco Certification Security Investigations and Enforcements Program Manager. Such a cool title. Brent, yeah, welcome to the show.
I don't throw this word around very much because I probably shouldn't be allowed to say it, but that is a baller title.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The enforcement manager, you know, so that's kind of what I do too. So, hey guys, my name is Brent Morris. I'm the enforcement manager for our dedicated exam security team with our Cisco certifications program. So basically what I do is I do the enforcement side of things. We're looking for any type of exposure for candidates and testing centers and websites, and I'm taking the enforcement actions against them. We're taking down websites. We're finding candidates that are cheating. We're finding testing centers that are colluding. I'm a part of a two-man team, and we're trying to mitigate the security, the best way we can.
So Brent, let's kind of talk about the why behind that. So if people find exam answers or they find a way to cheat and they end up getting a certification, you know, ultimately it's not going to bode well for them in the long run because it's at some point they're going to have to show their knowledge on the job and they're not going to be able to. So ultimately they're going to kind of hurt themselves. So why is enforcing exam security overall important to Cisco and their certification program?
Yeah, so I mean, the way we look at it at Cisco is we want to protect the investment of the customer, right? I mean, let's just say a candidate spends, you know, 6 months going through boot camps and taking off work and spending all this money to become certified. And then there's one guy who goes to a website and finds all the answers and becomes certified as well. I mean, we're a team trying to protect that investment for the person who did it the right way, right? And they want to see us take those enforcement actions because they don't want to see their colleague who passed the easy way to have the same certification as them. So it's really the value and how we want to protect that, because that makes it meaningful, right? I mean, if a Cisco certification, if everybody could pass it, if it was easy, you know, if AJ said, "Hey, I passed the CCIE last night after I finished dinner," it was no big deal. It wouldn't mean anything, right? I mean, wouldn't. So that's the angle that we try to take is you know, hold that integrity of it, that the value's got to hold, and that's what makes it so important. That's kind of the angle we go.
I want to know what AJ had for dinner to
my Wheaties.
That's the CCIE, yeah.
That's great. So there's so many questions. So we're definitely protecting the investment that, you know, we're all making as we're studying for these exams. We're protecting the validity of it. So when somebody says, I have my CCNA, my CCNP, my CCIE, whatever it is, it means something, right? It's valuable.
Right.
So what are some, I guess, common ways that, you know, people might try to cheat the exams?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways. And, you know, we can go into some stories too. But, you know, the typical having a cheat sheet. Right. You could have a, you know, a cell phone, electronic device in a room. We've seen people who have shorts that they pull up and they've got all the answers written on their legs. we've seen people that are, this is a true story. I've dressed up as a drape in the background, actually, as the test is going on.
Oh, get out of here.
It stopped and said, there's a person behind you. I mean, those stories are unbelievable. You know, people who leave the room and come back, proxy testing. That's a big one. So it's just endless ways. You can have hidden cameras. It's just, as you can imagine, there's always ways to cheat on an exam. And the way I always like to kind of look at it is with cheating, there's three buckets that we kind of put it in, right? And we say that there's going to be people who cheat all the time. It doesn't matter what it is. If Tim, what's your favorite football team? Give me an example.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Okay, so if I gave you a quiz, right, and I said I would give you, I don't know, $1 million if you got some questions right, you would probably find a way to get, you know, I mean, sometimes they have to do what they have to do to pass.
Yeah, right? The stakes are high.
Yeah, that's right. And then there's some people who just will never cheat. Right. They'll just, what is it? Doesn't matter what the stakes are. They're never going to cheat. But it's that middle. It's that middle bucket where it just depends on the circumstance. Right. That I have to pass this exam to get this job. What do I have to do? And we're trying to teach those people that if you do that, you're going to get caught with Cisco. And it goes back to the validity of the exam. The whole point of you doing this is to have that knowledge and you're not going to have it. So it's eventually going to catch up to you. So those are the areas we focus on.
So one of the examples that you mentioned earlier was somebody writing all the answers on their legs. And I'm thinking, like, man, the CCNP Encore is like 105 questions. Like, how are you going to fit 105 questions and answers on your legs? No. And then the question pool is several hundred questions. I mean, that blows my mind.
That's a pretty personal question, AJ.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could be like, I guess it comes back to like what brain dumps are, and they can kind of like categorize certain things, and it helps them memorize what questions that they've seen before. If they've seen the unauthorized questions online or something, or in a boot camp, it helps them memorize. So yeah, we've seen arms, we've seen a teddy bear behind somebody with a camera. We've seen, like I said, people, there was one person that was laying down the ground that were, you know, they said, move your camera, and you could see the person kind of recording. It's some crazy trying to stuff.
Sneak away like a snake.
Yeah. So, but, you know, but a lot of, you know, and this is, I want to take this platform today to kind of explain too. Sometimes it's a cultural issue, right? You know, where us three, we might see that as cheating, right? You know, that's, wait a minute, you got the answers. You shouldn't be deserved this. But some cultures, they have to feed their family. They'll do whatever it takes to pass these exams. And they don't look at it as cheating. They just look at it as, I'm doing what I have to do to get this certification. So we got to be careful and educate those people to understand what is considered cheating and what is not. And what can you be stripped away all your certifications that you've been working for the past 10 years. So that's, you know, that's something that we try to do as well.
All right. So we've kind of discussed like some of the different things that we've, you know, you've seen people do in attempt to cheat. We've talked a lot about dumps. Dumps comes up an awful lot. Like whenever I've passed an exam and posted it online, that's like one of the first things I get hit up with, right? Like, oh, where'd you get your dumps? Can I get your dumps? And a few times I've had to say like, hey, like that's not how this works. And they're like, oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. And it's like, well, that's funny.
Excuse me, what?
So with all of these crazy things that people are trying to do to pass the exams, you know, outside the lines of, you know, approved methods. What are some things that you and your team are trying to do to help combat some of this?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be cheating, right? It's just sure. The best way that we can mitigate it the best way possible. And the best way really for us is just to try to find out where the source of these problems are. And we've figured out that a lot of these, there's some organizations like around the world that provide these cheat services, right? And they provide just all the answers to these tests. But a ways that we try to get around that is we have some proactive ways that we can catch cheaters, right? Actually, you know, while you're taking a test, we have data analytics that can say that we have enough suspicion based on how you're taking the test that it could actually terminate the exam. Like,
whoa, while it's, what?
Yes.
While it's happening?
In real time?
In real time.
Wow.
So there's, you know, I can't go into those specifics to tell you exactly how we can do that. But we've got some really cool stuff, some really next level technology that we're using now. We've got, you know, we use the people who design these exams. We try to implement security in some of the questions that help in some of these security initiatives. We try to put out as many forms as possible, right? You know, think about it. The more forms that we have, the more questions, the bank of questions, it's more difficult to pass the exam, right? But, you know, it goes back to what you were saying earlier, AJ, is the having the validity has to be protected. Like mm-hmm. You have to have that knowledge in those questions, like creating new questions. And as the technology moves, keeping those goes fresh, but also integrating security inside that as well. But yeah, we're trying to take down websites. We're trying to define the testing centers. We're trying to add, you know, Pearson View is our testing vendor. Mm-hmm. And they have a dedicated security team as well. So we collaborate really well together. We got some new ways that we can protect the cheating with online exams. As you can imagine, that was the day I heard that we were going online exams. Man, I was scared to death. But we've come a long way since 2020. That some of the stuff we're doing now is incredible. So just be careful.
Yeah, with the being able to stop the exam in real time, I kind of think of, you know, the people when they're first learning like a video game and they just mashing buttons, you know, you're just going in the exam, you're just going question after question, just hitting them super fast. Yeah. that might trip the trigger there. I don't know. Good. But good. So let's step back and talk a little bit of history, Brent. When did Cisco specifically see exam security as a challenge or as an issue? And, you know, how long has your role or a similar role been around?
Yeah, so a dedicated security team was, I think, started around 2010. It was always one person, and it was always kind of the Wizard of Oz is the way I like kind of explain it. It was always somebody behind the curtain that was really just trying to find out what the website is the most popular and maybe trying to send a cease and desist to them. Now we're taking a totally different approach. We want to come on podcasts like this. We want to have, you know, podcast and YouTube sessions with our Cisco Learning Network team to let everybody know that there is a dedicated security team that's looking for this type of cheating going on. We think that's a better angle to come at because like I said earlier, it's about the customers that do things the right way. We want to show them how we're protecting their investment. So, yeah, 2010, I think is when we really had a dedicated team. It was a three man team back then. Now it's a two man team, but I think at some point we started to see the whack-a-mole of websites. I mean, it just blew up. I mean, and the problem that we started to have in early on was if there was a website called AJ Murray's Cheat Sheets, we could sue you and take it down. Well, a week later, it could be ajmurray2.com. So they would just change the URL and we're right back where we started. So that's when we said, okay, we got to figure out, we got to come up together with a team here to focus on not just that one website, but the source of the problem, the mothership that's providing all these answers. Where is the proxy testing coming from? Where is the harvesting coming from? To stop it from the top and it trickles down. So, but to do that, Cisco had to have a team to really focus.
Yeah, that was a question that I've had that I've kind of tried to understand better over the years. And I don't know how much about this you can necessarily talk about, but like how people get a hold of those. Like, yeah. You can't tell me people are like remembering the questions to this test and enough to be able to write them down afterwards and you know, harvest them that way and sell them. Like, if you can tell us, like, how do people get these questions?
I mean, we've seen, yeah, I mean, like you said, I can't go into specifics, but I can give you a couple of examples where we've seen candidates who come in and just go through it really fast. And then go back 5 days later and do it again and go through really fast. And they're not even really trying to pass. They're being paid to actually just harvest the questions and then go back and dump them as best they can.
Okay.
And that's just one way. You know, then you have, you know, going back to online testing. I mean, before we started to get really sneaky in 2020, you could just have a camera at a different angle and see your screen or have something hooked up to your monitor or a mirror or something where you can't really tell and harvest them that way. And then goes back to, you know, our testing vendor is Pearson View. You know, we have over 6,000 testing centers around the globe that produce Cisco exams. So as you can imagine, some of those testing centers are bad actors, right? I mean, somebody walks in with a wad of cash and says, "Hey, I need to see this exam." I mean, it could be that way. It could be that easy. So, wow. it's now you can see the challenge that we have to mitigate the exposure the best we can. And it's so difficult, and especially now with the internet, it's so easy that you can just blow up at any moment, like one website or one message board or one tweet, or it's crazy. So it's difficult, but we've got things in place that we've seen drastic changes. You know, so we're getting there.
So Cisco exams were traditionally in person in a testing center. Like any Cisco exam that I took pre-2020, I went into a physical center to take that. And like you said, in 2020, that all changed. So how did your role, how did your team change, and how did you have to adapt when 2020 rolled around?
Well, I mean, I was scared at first. I mean, when I first heard we were going to online testing, it scared me. But actually, as crazy as it sounds, and still when I say it out loud, it's hard to believe that the pass rates for back then to what it is today is the same. So that could mean a lot of things. It could be, it's more about the candidates that are testing just have that prior knowledge of these exams that they have found somewhere online. So that doesn't matter where you take the exam. If you have the answers, you've got the answers. You don't have to actually cheat in person. But some of the tactics we had to change was the way we enforced, enforcements that we did with, you know, who we catch. You know, before, if you're caught in a testing center with a cell phone, that's pretty egregious, right? And that's a lifetime ban. We want you out of the program, right? But now let's say that you're taking a test and your daughter comes in, or you gotta use the bathroom, or, you know, so we had to look at different ways. We had to explain the importance of the differences between in testing and online testing. And what we found out too is now we noticed that more people actually like to go in the testing center because now we're getting so secure with the online testing. We have so many things in place with browser lock and what you have to do and scan your room. And, you know, that it's almost easier to go in a testing center to test now. And it's actually more comfortable because you don't have to worry about your Wi-Fi cutting off or your daughter running in or your power going out or, you know, a lot of things. So, but as far as the security side of it, it's not much different. We still think the main problem is that, like we said, that the prior knowledge is the finding the questions before is the problem. So that's what we're working on a day by day basis to see if we can mitigate the best we can.
So you mentioned that you can, using various technologies, you can determine when somebody's like cheating during the test. So does that say that when you're comparing somebody who just knows the content, studied, did it right versus cheating, there's a different way that those people are answering the questions that's detectable?
Yeah. I don't want to give away my poker hand here, but it's we have actually dedicated like psychometricians at Cisco that work with us, right? Who actually will break down the response time and how you answer a question. Did you answer it right or wrong? How many did you get wrong compared to what is exposed and what is not? They're able to be able to look at that and determine that there was some type of prior knowledge that was going on. That's really all I can say.
I'm equating this to like a casino, like Vegas, where people are watching all the monitors trying to catch a people counting cards. This is just nuts.
I never knew that you could do this, but when you actually break down the numbers and see the probability of prior knowledge based to not, when they explain it to me like I was 5 years old, I'm like, wow, this makes sense. And then you really start to dig deeper and you're like, they knew the questions before they took the test. And it's really wild stuff.
That's crazy. So there's, I think of it as like, you know, there's the science of learning, and now there's like the science of test taking, and of course, you know, cheating.
We're just scratching the surface now. And look, whoever's listening to the podcast session here, don't be afraid to take a Cisco test. That, oh my God, if I passed, I'm gonna get, you know, but we have to have really egregious evidence, like multiple pieces of evidence before we take any type of enforcement act. And, you know, if you were caught in the net, I'm not saying it's impossible, but if you were, then you have the chance to appeal. And those appeals come to our team and we look at it, and it comes to a committee and we make a decision based on every aspect of where you took the test, how you took it. Maybe there was a reason that you were flagged for that. You know, maybe you used a boot camp from a specific website that was you didn't know. There's a lot of things that come into play of how we make our decisions based on those enforcement actions.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's talk about those enforcement actions a little bit, if we can. So yeah. Somebody is caught. We'll just take the example of the algorithm or what's happening real time in an exam. Yeah. Somebody's caught with, we're hitting multiple factors here. You have to have had prior knowledge of these questions with how you're going through this exam. So we're going to stop the exam. Can you kind of walk us through what happens after that? What the consequences are? What's the timing of those consequences? Can you speak to any of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I mean, when I say enforcement actions, I say we have warning letters, right? You can be sent a warning saying, hey, what you did, you were flagged for security irregularities. There was some type of fraudulent, you know, activity that was flagged. Be careful going in the future. Be careful where you get your study material. You know, if it's any third party outside of Cisco, you could be, you know, affected. Then we have a 6 month ban, right? Then we have a 1 year ban, a 3 year ban, and then the big one is the lifetime. And when we send the lifetime ban, that's we strip all your active certifications and you are banned for life. And as you can imagine, that's, we don't have, the gun isn't smoking. We have a video evidence of the gun being fired. I mean, we make sure that we have egregious evidence to take that type of enforcement action. But it just depends on the violation. It could be, I think I had a guy last week that was, taking a test and he just had to go to the restroom. He said, And the proctor said, you can't get up or your exam is going to be terminated. And he said, I have no choice. Right. So, I mean, you're told to make sure you use the restroom before, but he left the recording and he came back and his exam was terminated. And we're not going to ban that. Right. I mean, we're just going to say in the future, make sure that, you know, you understand the policies. And so this won't happen again. So, you know, it could be something like that. It could be you could have a cell phone. You're taking a test and all of a sudden your cell phone rings and you're looking at the proctor saying, can I just turn this off or my alarm's going off? I mean, we're not going to ban you for life. You know, you're out of here, pal. You know, so it just depends on the violation, the amount of evidence we have that will determine the different type of enforcements we give. And we have an appeals process, too. So, I mean, you always have that option to come back and give us your story. And as you can imagine, some of those appeals are great.
and again, to your point, this isn't to talk scare tactics by any means. I just think it's important for people to understand, you know, what could happen, what the consequences are if these different things happen.
Right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's, I love having this platform to show people that, that look, you know, we're not trying to scare you. It's just about if you do things the right way and you don't go to cheat sheets, cheat sites and find the answers and have people take the test for you, or don't get caught with a hidden camera or something, you'll be fine. You know, it's okay. But if you do, we're going to, you know, we're going to catch you. And we've, you know, we take a lot of enforcement actions a year. It's a lot that we catch a lot of people cheating. And we feel like since 10 years ago and is now, they're still cheating. And like I said earlier, there's always going to be cheating, but we can see how we're making it more difficult now. Right. So if we catch somebody, it's much more egregious way they're getting caught rather than before. It was just everybody was trying, but now it's just so difficult. We're making steps in the right direction.
So a couple of questions. You talked about like the different lengths of bans and stuff like that. It doesn't sound like this is like a three strikes and you're out type of system, but I assume, you know, if you're dealing with a multiple offender, that each time the punishment's going to get more and more.
You're right. Yeah, it does.
But I mean, people could skip pass and go and go directly to jail, right? If they're that egregious on the first offense, then yeah, you know, they're out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have a matrix that we go by that, you know, if you're flagged by, you know, your phone ringing during a test and then you're caught again, the enforcement might be a little bit different the second time because, you know, or there's some people that are caught doing something that they didn't realize. Like there was a guy who had a pen and paper during his online exam session, and you're supposed to use the electric whiteboard, and he just didn't know, right? But if he's caught again using the pen and paper a month later, and he's taken 3 or 4 Cisco exams, it may be a little bit more egregious punishment there, because by now you should know what the testing policies are. And then it gets a little bit more suspicious of what exactly are you doing? You know, so it just depends. Yeah.
And just so I understand, like in the cases of the phone ringing or somebody being seen having pen and paper, you know, we talked about what some of the enforcement actions are after the fact, but is it cut and dry that in any of those cases, the exam is just terminated immediately, or were any of these people able to, or are able to actually finish the exam?
Yeah. I mean, again, it depends on the violation. Like we have the real time, the exam will be stopped. Sometimes even the exam won't even load based on some of our security. Can't go into that one. That's a new one. That's a big one. But sometimes the exam won't even start based on some of the security measures we have in place. But if they do, it could be something along as we have enough suspicion. We're not going to ban you, but your exam has been invalidated, you know, and it cost you $350 or, you know, $400 to take the test.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big punishment, right? So enough to where they say, you know, I better not do this again, or I'm going to lose another $400. But like I said, it's got to be pretty egregious, that enough suspicion that we would, you know, stop the exam like that. But, you know, especially with, as you can imagine, with, you know, CCI labs, and that's like, you know, you're in a lab setting with a laptop. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, so those are really expensive, you know, so you got to be careful with that too. So, it just depends. It just depends on the situation. And we don't have a line that we draw for every single type of violation we see. We kind of have to make a decision on the fly sometimes. If we've never seen this before, we bring a committee together with our Learning at Cisco team to say, what's the right play here? And usually we feel like we make the pretty good decision based on protecting that integrity of the Cisco certification.
Do you have any percentages on, or can you share any percentages on how often you're catching people trying to take advantage of these exams?
Yeah, I mean, I have that, but I think I'd be pretty slapped on the wrist if I gave those numbers. But I mean,
sure.
But like, remember, like I said earlier, how the pass rates are actually kind of the same as they were in 2020. So it's not that much different. We're just seeing it trending in the right direction as far as just we've made it just so difficult for the cheating to happen. And we've got new security measures in place with Pearson View to actually catch you proactively before the exam starts, during the exam, and now after. Before, it was always just after the exam from a website, and that's all we could do. Well, now it's just, it's all over. I mean, if somehow you cheated, we're going to find out a way to you know, most likely we're going to get you.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Hey, One fans, Unimus is a network automation and configuration management solution designed for fast deployment and ease of use. Unimus offers features essential in any network admin's toolkit, disaster recovery being the one we'll focus on today. Unimus performs continuous and automatic config backups of your network devices. From backups, a version configuration history of the whole network is created. On top of this, Unimus also provides change management, configuration auditing, and network automation features. Incredibly fast to deploy and easy to use, on-premise, and supporting more than 300 device types across 100-plus vendors, Unimus is your best choice for NCM software. Now back to the show.
So, question. Let's say I study hard, I take my exam, and I pass, and then I hear of another person who maybe went to a testing center down on Shady Lane, and they passed their exam, but it was because they got to take advantage of stuff. Is there a way for me to report that? Do you have?
Yes. Yeah. So I was going to bring this home at the end because this is most important. But we have a security tip line alias, right? It's the easiest and best way to contact us. I'll repeat it too. It's security-tipline@cisco.com.
Okay. Right?
So again, it's security-tipline@cisco.com. It's that easy. You don't have to go nowhere and open a case and create a login. It's literally, you can just email that alias. And that's an email that comes actually directly to me. And I kind of delegate that to where it needs to go. But, and this could be just a simple question. Hey, is this website okay for me to use to study for my Cisco exam? I have a buddy. His name is Tim. You know, he cheated on this exam. Let's rip his certification away. You know, maybe we'll start an investigation. And hey, Tim, where did you study your CCNA at? You know, and Tim might say, well, I went to this website, and then we go to that website and we see 10 other people's names. And then it snowballs into a massive investigation to where we can send a cease and desist at that website, and we can take enforcement actions to all the candidates listed on the website. So a simple tip that we get can snowball into a massive home run for us. So we take our tip line serious because we've had a lot of success stories based on just tips coming to us, and that's internal and external. So again, security-tipline.com. If you have a question, any suspicion, website, testing center, just send it our way and we'll look at it. And we'll get back to you pretty quick.
I love it.
So I really like that concept of being able to leverage that email tip line to ask questions about the validity of certain training programs and websites, because there is so much content out there, free content, paid content, that, you know, some are from the major providers that we all know and love, but some are just out there that you can find in a Google search and you don't really know. So I find that email conversation way of being able to get that information is helpful. Is there anything that is published within Cisco's website that people can go to get tips on what to look for when they're looking for training material or practice tests? I think practice tests is probably the big thing, because you want to check where you're at and you want to get practice tests. And again, there are the known reputable vendors that do that, but people may just Google search that don't really know any better and say, oh, okay, this looks good. I'll pay $20 to this company and get some practice tests.
Yeah. I mean, that's really tough. And, you know, we have our NDA, our confidentiality agreement, that actually, you know, speaks to some of this, of what, you know, do's and don'ts, right? And that's on our website, you know, Cisco's website. If you go to certifications and you go to, you know, the Cisco NDA, it'll break all that down. But that's more like a legal document that's kind of hard to read. But as far as like do's and don'ts. When you go to the testing center, you know, you're given a list of do's and don'ts. Like, it's like a testing procedure and policies is what they call it. And that's really important. And Cisco has worked with Pearson View to make sure that that's really, really, you know, clear about what you can and can't do before you test. So that's always a good way. And always just ask questions. You know, ask the proctor that you're taking, you know, or send an email to our alias. But as far as the content, though, that's difficult because you don't, there are some good training centers out there. I know some people personally that run boot camps that really dive into the topology and the blueprints and how you learn this technology. They love this stuff, right? And that's okay. They're not getting paid by Cisco. They're not Cisco affiliated, but they're okay. But we like to say what is kind of safe for us to say, if it's not Cisco affiliated, you're always taking a risk, right? Because you just never know. So we always like to point people to our Cisco Learning Network, to Cisco Press, to go on our Cisco Learning Network message boards, see what other people are using, to the best strategies that they use. Because those conversations are always monitored. And obviously, if it's something that's kind of, you know, fraudulently, you know, is kicked out. But if it's Cisco affiliated, it's always going to be safe. And if you're not sure, if it's a third party, send it to us. Let us just do our research to see how it is, because we may have already investigated that site before and say, they're good to go. These are the good guys. Or we might say, no, just don't go to AJ Murray's cheatsheets.com. That's not good. That's not a good one. So
I better take that down before you take it down.
Yep. That's right. No, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think this will be really beneficial to a lot of people, because I'll be honest with you, Brent, I had never heard of that tip line to be able to either, you know, report some misdoings of other folks. But also I think the biggest part of that is to be able to ask those questions, like you said, to be able to have the conversation when people don't know, because there are, you know, people that are getting certifications that have been around a while, but there's also people trying to break in and they don't know what's good and what's bad yet. So getting this information out there to know that, hey, here's an email that you can hit to ask us any of these questions, I think is super important.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, you know, in the past, we were always kind of Wizard of Oz. We were behind the scenes, and now we're more like front facing, like, come to us, ask us questions. You know, we'll tell you what we're doing. We'll show you some security measures we have in place. You know, we're trying to help protect that investment that you have. And that's what's important. And that's what we want to get out. We want to that more and get the community more involved in helping us protect help us help you type thing. So we think that's a better approach. And we've seen it trending in that right direction.
It's all about the hearts and minds now. I like it.
That's right. That's right.
So Brent, I want to ask, in the last couple of years, Cisco has announced a mobile CCIE lab. How has that added an extra layer of complexity or heartache to your job? I think I've seen that people are allowed to bring their own devices to that. So that's got to add some stuff for you.
Well, it's crazy as it sounds. When I heard that, I was even more shocked than the online. Right? But when you bring your own device, you have to, you have a thumb drive that you actually log into you log into a whole nother system. It's like a browser lock system.
Okay.
Nothing else can be running but that program.
Gotcha.
And we've had our engineers try to get around it and they can't do it. Like, unless it's like I'm sure there's a way to do it, right? But they haven't, you know, it's very secure. And I've actually been shown how it works and stuff. And you can't even shut down the browser lock, or you lock your whole laptop. So yeah, at first I was scared too, AJ. I was like, I don't know about this bring your own device, but if you have to, it's an iOS. Does that sound right? It's like you have to log in. It boots up from that.
Oh, you boot off the USB.
Okay.
Gotcha. You so you're not booting into like Mac OS or Windows or whatever. You're booting into that device.
Yeah. And it's a whole nother operating system. You have no control. So,
gotcha. You know, okay.
So yeah, it's actually probably more secure than anything else, as crazy as you sound, as you would think. But yeah, at first I was a little skeptical too. But yeah, after seeing it, yeah, it's pretty secure.
How about like the expert level exams, like the labs and the CCDE practical? Do you still encounter people? I mean, you have to go to Cisco facilities. You use Cisco hardware, like laptops, computers, whatever. I don't exactly know how they administer the CCDE practical, but again, you go to a Cisco facility. Do you still see people trying to cheat those exams as well?
You do. It's not as many as the associate level. I mean, it's a little bit easier. I mean, cause those expert level exams, you can have maybe the topology of what you're trying to do, but you still have to know what the heck's going on, right? Mm-hmm. There's not, because those are more hands-on than just A, B, C, and D.
Sure.
So we see a lot less of that, but don't get me wrong. We've seen the exact topologies for some of our labs online. And that's when we have to go to the CCIE engineers. Hey, we got to switch this up. We got to get some new, you know, ways that we can, you know, change the topology here, because we found this online that was somehow extracted and we don't know how it happened. So it's a constant battle, man. But yeah, we see that too. It's not as much, but it's there.
Yeah. Wow. That's it. I mean, it's shocking and it's not, I get it. Like some people are just always going to try to cheat, but like to get to that level, the expert level.
Yeah.
And try to cheat. It's
what always blows my mind is the amount of time that people will spend to cheat is like, you could have just studied for the
freaking. Yeah. I was kind of thinking of that earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
But yeah, it's pretty wild.
So I know we
talked at length about the different ways that people can cheat. But I tell you, this one really just kind of blows my mind. The whole thought about proxy of people taking exams on behalf of somebody else. Now, I know you can't get into percentages or how often it really happens, but is this really a common problem?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, we collaborate with our testing vendor, Pearson View, and we can... Let's say that AJ takes his test, his CCMP tomorrow, but he takes it from from Dubai, right? And the system's triggered to say, well, hold on, AJ lives in the United States. Did he flew to Dubai last night and just knocked out CCMP and flew back home? So, I mean, it's things like that as we categorize as like evidence, and if we can have multiple pieces of evidence of, you know, AJ was in Dubai and he passed this exam, you know, this way and answered these questions like this. And we found him on this website associated to this website. Like we tie all that together. But proxy testing, yeah, it happens. We see it from those kind of aspects where, you know, they'll take the test for you or, with online testing, it's a little bit more difficult because you actually have to provide your credentials and it's being like Pearson View actually is looking at the credentials and making the decision. But we see some fake IDs that come through to try to, you know, or we see what's another cool story is I'm thinking as I'm talking is Pearson View, they actually have other vendors they work for. It's not just Cisco, right? So they can actually see, well, they catch a proxy tester taking an AWS exam. They'll put them in the database. And if that guy takes a Cisco exam, it'll flag. So there's ways that we can catch those proxy testers. But yeah, they'll try to do it the best they can. But that's getting very more difficult than it was 10 years ago. That's a lot more, like there's just lots of ways that we can catch the proxy tester now. But that's at one time, that was kind of the number one way to get a certification was not take it yourself, just have somebody take it for you.
Wow.
Yeah, duplicate profiles, like doing all that stuff. It was wild.
You can't do the glasses and mustache disguise anymore. They're going to catch on to that pretty quick.
That's right. So, yeah, I mean, fake registration pictures, I mean, backgrounds, I mean, you can tell it's a fake photo. I mean, we've seen it all. But, you know, like I said, if they just spent more time just trying not to cheat, they probably just pass the exam.
So you've touched on a lot of different examples. Can you tell us, like, the silliest things you've ever seen or heard of people doing?
Yes.
Just yeah. Outright, like...
The guy, the curtain guy was my favorite. I mean, like behind the curtain, like
so was there somebody behind a curtain feeding the test taker? answers just, or trying to take pictures of?
He could probably see through it enough to where, you know, he could see the monitor, I guess, or he was doing something. I'm not sure what was
wow.
To be honest, I don't know if they didn't think we could see him. One time we had somebody, you know, people just coming in the room and having no idea somebody's taking a test, like, you know, college buddies, and they're just coming in with, you know, drinks and stuff. I mean, we've seen some crazy stuff there. One guy, it's kind of pretty crazy, but he was taking an exam and he wanted to use the restroom, and we told him that if he did, his exam would be canceled. So he just let it go right there. yeah, some of the stories, then, because Pearson View sends us these reports, and we kind of go back and review some of the video, and but we see people who are taking the test, and they'll have glasses on, and you can see, like, you know, Tim, if you had a phone in front of you, I could see the reflection.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
they'll just be cheating while they're taking the test, and you would confront them. They'll be like, I have no idea what you're talking about, and I'm like, I'm literally watching a video of you looking at your phone. And the stories they try to tell you too, the, you know, the ways to get around the appeal to let, you know, those are funny too. I wish I had some of those good appeals I've had about their wife wouldn't talk to them for a month or something, and all sorts of crazy stories that we hear. It's, please don't ban me. I know I did what's wrong, but we got, you know, it's just zero tolerance for what we catch, because if we let one person go, we would have to let everybody go.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've come across some pretty cool stories.
Oh my gosh. That's
See, I'm always nervous about it, because I'm always like super careful when I'm taking a test, because I like when I'm studying and if I'm doing practice tests, like I will tend to like just read out loud. It's just easier for me to read and comprehend if I'm actually, and I'm not like talking like yelling in the room. It's just, you know, it might be kind of over my, under my breath or, but you can definitely see. I'm a lip reading when I you can definitely see the lips move, and it's like I've heard that be an issue, and in fact they even will put that in. You mentioned like the best practices and the do's and don'ts of the tests is, it's like, do not read the questions out loud. We don't want to see your lips moving, because who knows what you could be doing. So that's something I'm always really conscious about.
And look, and they'll give you multiple warnings before they actually
take
the exam. I mean, it's got to, like I said, it's got to be pretty egregious to shut it down. But just suspicious eye movements, you can have your exam shut down. I mean, looking all over the screen, like, why are you looking all over the screen or looking over here? Like, that just, you're taking a test. It just looks kind of suspicious. Right? So, but it's like I said, it's got, over a amount of time, it's got to be suspicious enough to where the proctor will say, okay, this is, something's going on. I'm not sure. Let's shut this down.
I'll admit I've been yelled at while taking an exam at home. So I had a Windows machine for work, and for whatever reason, I couldn't get that to fire up the test engine. It just wasn't working. So I ditched that. And this is like moments before I'm supposed to take my exam. So I grab my personal MacBook and I fire up, you know, the test engine. It's the first time I've ever taken it on my Mac. I had no idea what to expect. For whatever reason, the test engine, when it goes full screen, the text is like super small on the MacBook screen. It does not scale well. Mm-hmm. And so during the exam, I'm like, got my head right up on the screen, because I'm trying to read these tiny ass words, and all of a sudden I hear, back up. I can't see your full face. If you do that again, I'm going to shut down your exam. I'm like, okay.
I'm sorry.
So now you're just back there just squinting.
Yeah. Just like, I think it's
Yes. No, we've seen some crazy stuff. But yeah, like I said, it's just, if it's egregious enough, they'll shut it down, but most likely you'll be okay. Like Tim said earlier, this wasn't a scare tactic type call, and I hope nobody took it that way. It's just, we just wanted to let you know that, you know, if you do cheat or have prior knowledge or have a proxy tester, you know, we're going to catch you. And that's good for the people that are doing this the right way. It's just protecting that investment of the Cisco certification, and, you know, it's holding the integrity of that. And that's the whole point of what we do. So
Yeah, I mean, I certainly appreciate what you do. You know, there's a lot that goes into creating these exams, studying for these exams. And I just think about, like, you know, trying to brain dump an entire question pool, because you never know, like, what questions you're going to get every time you sit down, you take that exam. I mean, I took the Encore like 3 times before I passed it. And it wasn't until that third time that I thought I saw maybe a couple of questions that I had encountered on one of my previous two attempts, right? Like, yeah. So I couldn't imagine trying to memorize 300, 400, 500, however many questions that are in the pool, and try to expect to be successful. So
you might as well just learn the shit.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sometimes it's just easier just to learn it. Yeah. The technology. Yeah.
So. You'll be better off in the long run anyway.
And then the proxy testing, that's something that I get hit up on LinkedIn quite a bit. Like, oh, hey, are you studying for a certification exam? Well, we can guarantee 100% test pass rate. And it's like, well, how do you do that? Well, we have somebody else take it for you. And it's like, why would I do that? Like, that doesn't benefit me. I'm not going to learn anything. And at some point, I'm going to be expected to apply this knowledge that I said that I've learned. And if I can't do it, that's not going to bode well.
And then you take 10 seconds and just copy and paste and send an email to security-tipline.com, cisco.com, of who contacted you on LinkedIn, and let us start that investigation, which could bring down the mothership of proxy.
That I know that that tip line exists, you can guarantee I'm gonna email you the next time.
Yes. Like I said, just one tip could bring down the whole entire, you know, fleet of proxy testing. So in some country, and all because of AJ's one email to us. I'm telling you, we've had some big investigations. We've sued, Cisco sued testking.com for millions of dollars, and that's public knowledge.
Oh my gosh, I've heard that name. Early on in my career, there was a bunch of people that'd be like, oh man, just go to TestKing. And you're like, you literally go to the website, and it says, like, or, well, you could go to the website at some point, probably not now, it sounds like. It was just like dumps. It said it right there, dumps. I'm like, no.
If they have it up there now, it's not the same. It's like old content. It's like, or it's like old questions, because we have people that are monitoring that to make sure that those, you know, it's not copyrighted Cisco content on there. If it does, they're in big trouble.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got them. We got other websites too. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's just, we're trying to, one day we're going to have a home run hit and really find an organization that is into all this prior knowledge and proxy testing, and we're really going to make a dent. And we're getting there, and we've got some investigation tactics, and we've got ongoing investigations now that, some in-person trainings and websites that we're looking at, and organizations and boot camps, and we got a lot of stuff going on. Really cool stuff.
Awesome. Well, I want to reiterate to everybody listening, this was not any sort of attempt to scare you. We want you to continue to study for your Cisco certification exams. And if you're studying using proper resources, you should feel just fine about what you're doing here. So study for them, take them. If you're not sure where you're getting your resources from, or whether or not those resources are valid, as Brent said, you can look up security-tipline at cisco.com, send your resources on over, and they'll tell you whether or not those are valid or not. So, you know, you really shouldn't have any concerns walking into your next exam, and keep doing it. But if you're doing some sketchy shit, we're on to you. Cisco's on to you.
Yeah. Just real quick too. Thanks for this platform, guys. I mean, we're always trying to, you know, get out there that we have a dedicated team that are doing what we do every day. And coming up with new security measures, and we need the community's help as much as we, you know, as what we do to mitigate the cheating and hold that integrity. We just got back from Cisco Live. We had an exam session where people, we kind of talked about some of the same things we talked about today. And, you should have seen the people were blown away of how we have a dedicated team, and they were so glad. They're like, wow, I never knew that Cisco does this. So we're we're trying to get that more out there to let people know. I think that's a good thing. So yeah, thanks for this opportunity to be able to share that today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's great to share what you guys are doing there to help protect the validity of the exams. We totally understand you can't show your hand, right? Like, right. You can't tell us everything that you're doing to protect it, but it sounds like you're doing a lot of cool stuff and you're catching a lot of people and organizations that are, you know, in support of stuff like this. So we're happy to share the story, and we're real glad you chose to spend some time with us. So thank you so much, yeah. Brent, for joining us this evening. Any final questions, Tim, or thoughts, Brent?
Yeah, just, I mean, certifications in these exams are very much so front and center for a lot of people that are trying to make their lives better. They put a lot of time and effort into this. So this is definitely a prevalent conversation, and really to echo what Brent's been talking about this entire time to bring it back home, it's about protecting the validity of the amount of time and knowledge that people gain. And again, to protect that, to make it valid, and that people can't just come in, or to knock down the percentage of people that just come in and cheat to get the same thing that the other person spent so much time for. I think it's right. With more and more people, especially over these last few years, jumping into IT from other professions and other industries, this is becoming more and more of an important thing. And I'm sure it's still a challenge, but it sounds like Brent, you and your team are really putting a dent into this and making this a forefront issue and keeping these certifications valid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a challenge, but like we said, we are trending in the right direction. We're seeing it in the numbers. We're seeing it in the feedback we're getting. We're seeing it from the community. It's just, we got to keep just hammering away. Because like I said, there's always going to be cheating, right? It's never going to stop. There's nothing we can do. That's just say, hey, you know, how can you stop cheating? But we can make it as difficult as possible. And we can put things in place that just, it protects it a little each time. And it keeps getting better and better as we do it. So that's the goal.
I love it. Brent, is there any websites, resources, if people want to learn more about you or Cisco Exam Security? Are you on social media, anything like that? Any links that we can share with our audience?
Yeah, our Twitter handle is Cisco Exam Security at symbol Cisco Exam Security. So definitely reach out to us there. Obviously, our tip alias is the best. Just throw that out there, security-tipline@cisco.com. We monitor that on a daily basis. That's the best way to contact us. And if you need us, you can open cases with Cisco's customer service team. If you open a case with them and just say you have exam security issue, it'll come directly to us too. But yeah, just our alias is the best way. Open case with customer service, they'll get to us. And the Cisco Learning Network, that's a really good one on Cisco's webpage. I'm sure you guys know Matt Saunders and William Villa in there, and those are great guys, and they really help us protect that investment of the certification too. And we kind of, that's a good place to go to if you have any questions, exam security related or just certifications related. That's a great place.
Awesome. Are you on Twitter at all?
Yeah, but not really for our exam security tip line. Cisco Exam Security is our best Twitter handle.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, mine might be not solely just Cisco stuff. I'm a Duke fan, so I might have some Duke basketball stuff.
There you go. Awesome.
And hey, if you want to find AJ's secret recipe for guaranteed CCIE passing dinners, check out ajmurraycheatsheets.com.
I might have to go buy that domain now, and I'll check out some for sure. Website.
It might already be gone. It's crazy.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Brent, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and we will see you next time on another episode of the Art of Network Engineering podcast.
Yes.
Hey everyone, this is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of Net Eng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes. You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.